Hello and welcome to this Australian Family Physician podcast. I'm your host, Professor Steve Margolis, and today we welcome Dr. Linda Behrens to the microphone to talk about obstacles to alcohol and drug care and whether Medicare locals are the answer. Dr. Behrens is the program lead, treatment and systems, Turning Point Alcohol and Drug Centre, and adjunct senior research fellow at Monash University in Melbourne, Victoria. More detailed information can be found in the article in the May 2013 edition of AFP, co-authored with Professor Dan Lubman from the same institution. Dr. Behrens, thanks very much for your time in talking to AFP Audio.
Thanks for having me.
Perhaps we could start with a brief outline of the harms and costs to the community of alcohol and drug-related problems.
Well, as I think many of us are aware, alcohol and drug problems are significant issues for Australia. The National Survey of Mental Health and Wellbeing shows that around 1 in 20 Australians have an alcohol or other drug problem. And this is a particular concern for young people, involving around 1 in 10 of those aged between 16 and 24. For harms to those with alcohol and other drug problems include physical and mental health concerns, as well as social exclusion. Many of those in treatment may have limited income, relationship problems, and they may be socially isolated, and many are not in treatment. So problems with alcohol and other drug use impact not only those using these substances, but those around them, particularly family members. And a recent national survey conducted by my colleagues here at Turning Point showed that heavy drinking by a family member resulted in harms for more than one-third of participants. So these family members reported harms ranging from worry and relationship problems to concerns about household income and childcare. So across all common substances, harms to the user alone cost Australian society around $55 million in 2004-2005, and this figure is likely to be significantly higher today.
Thank you. Your paper focuses on a number of evidence-based strategies for addressing alcohol and drug concerns within primary healthcare settings. Perhaps you could walk us through each of these strategies, the problems they address, their associated benefits, and how the Medicare local is ideally suited to help.
Australia has a strong public health system and our society is committed to helping those in need of care. And at the same time, there's increasing demand on our services and pressure for these services to be more efficient and more effective. So reaching people who are just starting to experience problems with alcohol and other drugs, as well as those with more entrenched problems, is a major challenge. Alcohol and other drug problems are highly stigmatised and people are reluctant to seek help. Some providers are reluctant to raise the issue with their patients. Access to care within primary health services is quite inadequate, and Medicare locals provide an opportunity to configure health service so access to alcohol and other drug care is supported and timely intervention can occur. There's been quite a bit of research to identify how services and systems can be configured to help support people's access to care that matches their level of need. One of the strategies we put forward in the paper seeks to challenge negative attitudes that are held by staff toward those with alcohol and drug problems. These views are about who's responsible for the problem and its solution, and if intervention helps. And of course, there is strong evidence that it does. So we need to challenge these negative attitudes about alcohol and other drug use problems and intervention. And primary health is very well placed to address this. Strategies they can use include building responsiveness into policies and value statements, celebrating and acknowledging staff with particular skills and utilising these skills as a source of advice for others. Awareness raising across organisations and including strategies within workforce development such as induction phases and ongoing training. And even more specific strategies such as facilitating access to training posts in addiction medicine for general practice trainees, disseminating information on achievements made in the provision of services, and formalising the links between primary health and local alcohol and other drug services. Another strategy we've looked at in the paper is integrated and coordinated models of care that operate across primary health and specialist alcohol and other drug services. And of course, this is a focus for many parts of health. And in simple terms, these models support referral pathways and they improve organisational efficiencies. The evidence we've looked at talks about three models of integrated and coordinated care. One of them is co-location, another specialist outreach clinics, and the third is collaborative care. And the evidence shows that there's increased service visibility for patients, there's supported referrals and stronger referral pathways, there's ease of coordination when multiple services are providing for a single patient, and there's a flow-on effect in that staff learn more about alcohol and other drug problems and their capacity to respond and the usefulness of those responses. I'll just go on to talk a little bit about those three models of integrated and coordinated care. Co-location is quite common in Australia, and this happens in a number of ways. The alcohol and other drug service might be part of the primary care service. In fact, in that it may be in the same building, it may be on the same grounds, it may be located just a couple of kilometres away. There's some interesting work being done involving patients aged 65 years or more that showed the distance between facilities is a key factor. So here I'm talking about primary health and the specialist service. And as the distance between those two services increased, so we might have a specialist clinic in the same building or in the same campus or in a separate facility that's not too far away, as that distance increases, engagement with the specialist clinic decreases. Now, this is likely to be an extreme case because we're talking about an older group that may have limited mobility and limited ways to get from one place to another, but it's really quite fascinating to think about the simple relationship between those two factors and how it may be overcome by how we configure services. Another example is with regard to the provision of opiate pharmacotherapy in primary health care. When these services are provided within primary health care, patients have increased access to other health services, and they often have other health problems, so that's really important. This can include preventative options. And there's scope to develop appropriate management routines, for example, involving patients with chronic pain. So there's lots of benefits there by having that shared expertise on site or not too far away. There's another approach to coordinated and integrated care that involves the provision of specialist outposted services or clinics that might involve a clinic at the primary health facility, or there might be a consultation and liaison model where the specialist can be contacted for advice. And we refer to a Cochrane review authored by Gruen et al. Where they looked at research on outreach clinics that provided simple consultations or were involved specialists were involved as part of a multifaceted intervention. And they found that the clinics performed better in relation to service delivery and patient outcomes. Patients liked this model better, and their satisfaction was higher, and the service costs were reduced, the quality of treatment was better, as were the health outcomes. So that's really taking advantage of the different areas of expertise and pooling those and providing them in a common sense manner, I guess, that facilitated ease of access. The third model is collaborative care, and this is similar to the chronic disease model that I'm sure everyone is familiar with. It involves a team of health professionals with specific areas of expertise and very much a coordinated model of care. And there's just simple advantages from having good links across different parts of health so that patients can access the care that they need. And we can use step-up and step-down models according to risk for relapse or level of intensity of need at different points in time. So there's three models of integrated and coordinated care, co-location and specialist outreach clinics and collaborative care really do have a lot to offer in terms of coordinated models of operation, such as the Medicare locals model, where we're seeking to draw in all the local resources and link them up, if you like, to the benefit of clients. Now, my focus here, Steve, has been mainly on those with entrenched problems, but early intervention is, of course, core business for primary care. And there's decades of evidence that talks about screening and brief intervention particularly for alcohol use, and that it really needs to be embedded within primary health. There's also quite a bit of evidence that says, well, for various reasons, medical practitioners are not well placed to deliver screening and brief intervention. And in our paper, we're suggesting that nurses should deliver screening and brief intervention as part of their regular processes. This means that those with risky drinking can be detected, those with more extreme problems can be referred on to specialist services. So it's really that important function that primary health offers for all patients coming through the door. We've trialled this approach here in Victoria in the northern part of the state in two hospitals, and there are really fantastic results in terms of the levels of detection of risky alcohol use and the flow-on effect, as I was talking about before, in terms of increased staff skills and confidence. And it really did. Screening and brief intervention became part of core business. It was just another thing that that nurses took on. So I think there's quite a bit that can be thought about in terms of the Medicare locals model and how these networks of services can work together to support access for detection and for responses to alcohol and other drug problems across primary and specialist services.
Okay, thank you for that very detailed analysis of what you've discussed in your paper, and also for providing a little bit more information and background of what's in the text. In summary, what do you think are the key take-home points for the listeners?
Sure. So I guess the messages we're trying to get across are the fact that alcohol and other drug problems are everybody's business, and that stigmatisation is a huge issue that all parts of health need to be aware of and seek to minimise. Primary health is really well placed to detect problems and facilitate pathways to specialist care, and that there's some good evidence on models of service organisation and delivery that have been really well received by patients and with good outcomes. And I guess these models maintain the role of primary health as the gateway to needed services, the place for early intervention and support, and the critical role of primary health in supporting people's journey into specialist treatment. Thanks for that, Steve.
Okay, thank you very much. That's the end of today's podcast. Special thanks to Dr. Behrens for her very interesting, informative discussion. For more information on this topic, please refer to the full article titled Obstacles to Alcohol and Drug Care, Are Medicare Locals the Answer?, which can be found in the Australian Family Physician, May 2013 edition.